Good morning. Today's daf in Shkolim is Yud Ches Moed Yud Zayin Amud Beis. We are starting towards the bottom of the Amud. We are starting with the words of Sar Shulchan Aser Shlomo, the 10 Shulchanos that were constructed by Shlomo HaMelech. Why are we discussing Shulchanos? Because in the Mishnah that we covered, the Mishnah informed us that that there are 13 Shulchanos in the Beis HaMikdash. So we went through the Azar and we noted that when you take a sum total of the number of tables that there are in the Beis HaMikdash, so there are a number, the number is 13. The Torah emphasizes the Shulchan that was in the actual Heichal itself. In the construction of the Mishkan, the Shulchan is one of the basic pieces of Kalim that are in the Mishkan. And obviously when making the Beis HaMikdash, so the Shulchan in the Heichal itself is obviously going to be of significance. But meanwhile, there are other tables as well. Tables basically serve as functional purposes in order to do the avoda. So when all said and done, we went through each one of the 13 tables yesterday, of which the shulchan in the heichal is one of the 13. So there comes out to be a total of 13 tables. That's what we discussed yesterday. Because this perek over here, the sixth perek of Shkalim, is dedicated to the number 13. 13 pushkas in the Beis HaMikdash, which we're going to be discussing later this morning. 13 ishtach havai, 13 times that we bow as we're walking around the Azara. And now the 13 shulchanos. Okay, so good. That's everything we've been discussing up until now. And now we pick it up in the Gemara where, and the Bavli has this discussion, and we saw this already in detail back in Menachos. And that is that not only was there 13 shulchanos, there was an additional 10 shulchanos. 10 shulchanos. That was put together by Shlomo HaMelech. So Asar Shulchanos Asar Shlomo. Dichsiv, the pasuk says, so it's a beferish pasuk in Navi. Vayah Shulchanos Asara Vayanach Behechel Chamisha Miyamin Vechamisha Besmol. Shlomo HaMelech made another 10 Shulchanos. Basically, the idea of the 10 Shulchanos is that they're there to augment and accentuate the Shulchan. So in other words, so you have the primary Shulchan, and then on top of that, you have an additional 10 Shulchanos in the Heichal, which were there basically to highlight and augment the Shulchanos. Interesting, the Gemara over here doesn't raise the issue, right? It seems to be excessive, and by excessive I mean baltosiv, meaning the Torah says that you're not allowed to add to the mitzvahs of the Torah, and the Torah does instruct us to build one Shulchan in the Heichal, and meanwhile over here, Shlomo HaMelech built an additional 10, but what you have to say more or less is that the 10 that were constructed by Shlomo was not there to add to the Torah, but just simply to emphasize and highlight the Shulchan of the Torah. Something along those lines. And as we're going to see in just a moment, not only did he build an additional 10 Shulchanos, he also built an additional 10 menorahs. The Gemara over here is really going to be focused on a logistic issue, and that is, where do you have room in the Heichal for all these additional Shulchanos and all these additional menorahs? And so, Im Tomar, now, hopefully this conversation sounds familiar, because we had the exact same discussion in the Bavli, so this is now going to be a review of the way we discussed in the Bavli. Truth of the matter is, a side-by-side comparison of the Yushami and the Bavli, which we're not going to do this morning, we're just going to go through the Yushami, you'll note that the conclusions are not going to be identical, but nevertheless, and as per the Yushami, look, I don't do a lot of Yushami, but as per the Yerushalmi now, this is now the 18th daf over here in the Masechta that we've been doing. The conversations are left very short. So this is going to be a brief discussion. So, Ein Tomer or Im Tomer, Chamisha Bedarim, Chamisha Betzal for now. If we're talking about the configuration of these 10 additional tables that were prepared by Shlomo HaMelech that went into the Heichal and abutted the Shulchan of the Torah of Alo, Ein Shulchan Kasher, Alo Betzalfon. Look, the Shulchan has to be on the north side. So in other words, when you're looking at the inside of the Heichal, Shulchan has to be in the north. The Pasuk says, the Gemara quotes, Shenamar Vashulchan Titein Al Tzalef Tzafon. So the Shulchan has to be in the north. So if our point of reference is when you're walking into the door, and there's going to be five Shulchanos to the right, meaning to the northbound of the Shulchan, and five Shulchanos to the left, meaning southbound of the Shulchan, well, the problem, of course, is that you're going to have Shulchanos that are going to be on the southern side of the Heichal and that you can't have. If you happen to have a picture of the Heichal in front of you right now, it'll be really helpful just so you can see this visually. And the Gemara says, Ma tamalamer chamisha miyamin v'chamisha mismol, ela chamisha miyamin shulchan Hashem Moshe v'chamisha mismolo. So the Gemara says, so what you're going to have to say is that the point of reference when we say to the right and to the left is that as you're looking at the shulchan of the Torah, meaning to the right is going to be to the east and to the left is going to be to the west. And that's what we mean. So the additional shulchanos that were made by Shlomo HaMelech is going to be to the right and to the left. Now, afa piken lo yemesadre ala b'shal Moshe bavad. Now, despite the fact that Shlomo HaMelech built another 10 shulchanos to put in the Heichal together with the shulchan of the Torah, so where were they mesadre lechem? Where did they put the bread? So according to the Tanakhama of this brisa, only on one shulchan, meaning the shulchan of the Torah. Shenemar shulchan asher alav lechem upon him. Rabbi Yosef disagrees. He says, "Akulani mesadre." No, lechem upon him would go on each one of the shulchanos. Shenemar so shulchanos the aleihem lechem. It's going to go on each one of them. Aleihem lechem upon him. Okay, good. So this is the brisa over here discussing the shulchanos that were added by Shlomo HaMelech, basically highlighting and accentuating the shulchan of the Torah. Over here, we're not given much more detail. In fact, over here, we're not given any more detail regarding the shulchanos. It sounds like over here that basically you had five to the right, five to the left. If you're looking at the Heichal of the first base of Mikdash, it was only 20 amos in length, meaning from the eastern end to the western end. Western end, I mean, really the curtain of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So basically, you're talking now about, I'm sorry, it's 40 amos from end to end, from east to west. Now, 40 amos east to west. Now, how long was one shulchan? One shulchan was in length 2 amos. So you're talking about 10 tables that were added and basically going from end to end. So the Tiklin Chadatin over here points out that it's very difficult to entertain the idea that basically you had 10 tables going from end to end. It would be a perfect fit within the 40 amos of the length. Anyway, if you remember the Bavli, Menachos says that they were not 10 tables in a row. Rather, the Bavli says that they were 2 lines of 5. Anyway, again, there's much more regarding this in the Bavli than we have over here in the Yerushalmi. Okay, but anyway, suffice just to highlight that the Yerushalmi does not be any more specific regarding the configuration. Now, everything we said regarding the Shulchan, we're now going to head towards the Menorah. So, Tani Mizrach Marv HaYinusunim Divir Rabbi. We're almost there. We're not up to the Menorah yet. Tani, we learned in a brisa, Mizrach Marv HaYinusunim, tables went lengthwise, meaning from east to west. Divir Rabbi, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, Amr, Tzav, Medarun HaYinusunim. And according to Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, so they went north to south. Naman Damar Mizrach Marv Nicha. Now, for the position that they went from east to west, that's very good. So, Kula Ru'un L'Sheiros, because now they're on the northern side, and that's excellent. So, Manda Amr Tzafim V'Darun, Nim Seshochem V'Darun, but the second opinion of this Brisa that it went north-south, that means that there's Shochanas in the south, and you can't have a Shochan in the south. The Torah is very clear about that. Okay. Right. And that's it. Meaning, okay, good. I knew the Gemara ended abruptly. I ended the Gemara more abruptly than the Gemara did, but the Gemara now has ended abruptly. Meaning, the Gemara just simply leaves us off at a question. I mean, the second opinion over here that says that the Shulchanos went from a north-south configuration, it doesn't work out based on the fact that the Shulchan has to be in the north. Okay, the Gemara just leaves it and ending that discussion abruptly. We move now to the top of Yerches Amud Aleph, today's daf. And the Gemara now is going to continue. Tani, skip the next 3 words. We learned in the following brisa. As far as the Shulchan is concerned, so it is halfway into the bias. Now, if you look at the floor plan of the Heichal, so you will note that you're basically going 40 amas across, where I'm going from east to west, or west to east, it doesn't matter. It's 40 amas across up to the parochus that separates the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And then in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it's 20 amas. It's going to be 20 amas by 20 amas. But leave the Kodesh HaKadoshim aside. Just focus on the actual room of the Heichal. So it's a very simple 40 amas by 20 amas. Good. So with that stated, so now basically what we're looking to, what this price is looking to do is, where do I put the Shulchan? Meaning I know it's on the north side, but in the east-west trajectory, where do I put the Shulchan? Where do I put the menorah? Again, along the east-west trajectory. I know the menorah goes in the south. The Torah says so. And where do we put the Mizbech Hazav? So that's what the Brice over here is telling us, basically, where does everything belong? So, HaShulchan HaYinasa Mechatzi HaBais V'Lifnim. So as far as the Shulchan is going to be concerned, it's going to go basically, you go to the midpoint and go interior, meaning go head westbound. And that's where the Shulchan has to go. So somewhere between the midpoint and the wall separating Kodesh and Kodesh Kodesh. And Mashuk Menekoso Sheyam Musa Mechza Kapi HaTzafon. Now, how far a distance is it from the north? So it's going to be 2.5 amos from the northern wall of the Heichal. Umenorah kenegdo bedarom. And parallel to that is going to be the menorah in the south. Mizbech hazav hayinos me'emza habayis. And the mizbech is going to be exactly at the midpoint. Cholik is habayis mechetsu v'lifnim. And it's going to be dividing the Heichal in half. Mashoch kima kape chutz. It's going to be just a little bit closer to the outside, to the exterior, than the interior. V'kulan hayinu sunim mishlish habayis v'lifnim. They're all going to be from a third of the house interior. What does that mean, a third? How does that work out? Meaning with this last line of the Braisa over here is basically treating the entire area of the Heichal as one entity. Meaning if we were to just, for a moment, ignore the partition between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so that means to say that we're going to have a total of 60 amos in total of length from wall to wall. And so therefore, when it says that it's going to be interior the first third, so what that means to say is that when you take the total of 60, so they're all going to be recessed within the first, after the first third of the Heichal. Okay, hopefully all that was clear. And again, if you have the picture, it really helps. Okay. Everything we said regarding the Shulchan, we're going to do the same thing regarding the menorah. I'm going to go through this next section a little bit quicker. As the menorah says, Shlomo, Shlomo Melech made 10 menorahs. Shenema v'yasas menorahs azav eser kemishpatam v'yitim be'echal chamesh miyamin v'chamesh mismol. Again, to augment the menorah of the Torah, Shlomo Melech built another 10 menorahs. That's beferish in the pasuk. Now, configuration. So here the Gemara is going to go through the same discussion. So again, if your point of reference is going to be to the right and left as you're walking in, so that means to say that can't be. You're going to have 5 menorahs to the north of the menorah of the Torah. That means that the menorahs, by definition, are going to encroach onto the northern side, and you can't have that. That we know that the menorahs have to be on the south side, not on the northern side. So the point of reference is going to be the menorah of Moshe, meaning the menorah of the Torah. And then as you're looking at the menorah, 5 to the right, 5 to the left, meaning 5 to the east, 5 to the west, or if you're from whatever. You understand. Ava pikin mavir ela Moshe bavad. And again, the Gemara goes over which one was actually lit. So over here, the Brisa brings down the same achlokas that we had regarding the Shulchan. So according to the Tanakhama, it's only going to be the menorah of Moshe Rabbeinu that's lit. There is not going to be, the other 10 menorahs are not going to be lit. Shenema menorah sazav v'nerosel liva'er ba'erev. So it's going to be lit on a nightly basis, but meaning it is going to be lit only the menorah of Moshe. And Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda Omer, Akulan ayu mavir. No, he would light all of them. Shenemer ves menorahs v'nerusim levaram kimishma levnei advir zav sagor. So the pasuk in Divrei Hayamim seems to indicate pretty clearly that all the menorahs were lit. So fine, so same achlokas that we had regarding the Shulchan, we're having regarding the menorah as well. So as long as we are going to be quoting the psukim over here, a description of the menorahs, so the Gemara just is going to be darshaning a little bit more in these psukim. So you have basically the decorations of the menorah, flowers, the actual lamps themselves, the instruments used to help you with the menorah. So Hain Kilu Zavo Shel Shlomo. That basically knocked off all the gold of Shlomo HaMelech. Now, what does that mean? So it basically means that that when the gold over here that was used to the building of the menorah was so refined and was so pure that no other gold basically was able to compare to the gold used for the menorah. Tani Rabbi Yehuda b'shem Rabbi Asi. In terms of refining the gold, the Gemara is going to quote the following brisa: Yeshlomo notel elav kikari zahav. Shlomo would start off with 1,000 kikars of gold. Kikar is a weight of measurement. Is a measurement of weight. Umach nisen lekor umotzian. He would put him in a kiln in order to burn it and purify it and take out all the impurities. Achuhu ma'amida malachad. And basically, you're going from 1,000 kikar to 1 kikar. Okay, I don't know anything about the refining of metal, and I don't know anything about the refining of gold. It sounds rather amazing that you're going from 1,000 kikar to 1 kikar. The point of the Gemara is really simple, and that is that it was as pure as one could imagine. L'kama shenemar kikar zav tahor asa osa. So over here, the Torah gives a description in terms of the gold used in order to make the menorah. It has to be as pure as possible. Tanya, the Gemara quotes a braisa. Am Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda Maisa b'menorah mikdash ha'isa yisera al menorah sha'asa Moshe b'midbar. Dinar Zahav, the menorah for the Beis HaMikdash was larger than the menorah that was made by Moshe by one dinar, and v'yechnisim l'kor shmonim pam, they put it into the kiln another 80 times, v'lo chasra klom, and none of the impurities went away, meaning it was as pure as possible. So the Gemara says v'yeus, Adelo Yakum al bira have chaser skin, but mindin kaim al bira lo chaser klum. So the if it still has impurities, so therefore you can extract the impurities, but once it's totally purified, so there's nothing left to extract. Okay, so the Gemara has given us a description of the shochanos and the menorahs that were added by Shlomo HaMelech. The Gemara spoke briefly regarding the configuration of both the Shochanos and the menorahs that were added by Shlomo HaMelech, and we continue. We're up to now the middle of Yudches Amud Aleph, and now we're up to the Shofros. In the Beis HaMikdash, you had 13 pushkas, basically. They were chests for depositing. And why the number 13? So here is our Mishnah. So this is going to be the Mishnah that describes the 13 pushkas in the Beis HaMikdash, and this will take us basically to the end of the parak. The end of the parak really is tomorrow's daf, but basically this is it. So shoshasra shofros hayu b'mikdash. There were 13 shofros in the Beis HaMikdash. The cost of aleim, and they are. Let's go over each one of the 13. Truth of the matter is, it's really 7 plus 6, but you'll see what I mean in just a moment. So number one is Tiklin Chadatin. So the shkalim of this year, all current shkalim that are contributed this year by each member of the Jewish people, in order to purchase the all the carbon seabor of the year. So that is the chest that's called Tiklin Chadatin. It sounds like the words Tiklin Chadatin were written. And again, if you remember, we had a discussion in terms of whether or not the writings on them were Hebrew or Aramaic. Right, if you recall, right, when doing the Trumas Alishka, so each one of the boxes that were used for the Trumas Alishka, so they were marked A, B, and C. Actually, they were marked Aleph, Beis, Gimel. And if you remember, there was an opinion back then that says that no, they were marked Alpha, Beta, Gamma. So that obviously is Greek. Over here, we're talking Aramaic, but it sounds like they were marked in Aramaic. And as we pointed out already a couple of times, in Eretz Yisrael, even during Bayis Sheni, they spoke in Aramaic. So on one of the pushkas, Tiklin Chadatin. On the second pushka, Tiklin Atikin. What's Tiklin Atikin? Basically, anyone who owes back taxes. You didn't contribute your Machitzas HaShekel from last year, so you're still on the hook for the Machitzas HaShekel last year, but you're not going to put it in the current pushka, because remember, all carbon seabirds of this fiscal year have to be purchased with this year's collection. So if you happen to be past due on previous years, so you're going to still bring that, but you're going to put it in a separate chest. what's called Tiklan Atikin, right? The old Shkalim. Ultra simply means not the current year. Okay, that's numbers 1 and 2. Number 3, Kinim. So there's a chess mark, Kinim. Now, literally, it's talking about a nest. It means a pair of birds. Gozle Ola. And there's another chest that says Gozle Ola as well. Now, specifically, these chests, numbers 3 and 4. So the Mishnah itself is going to be discussing exactly what was done with the monies that were collected in these two chests. Stay tuned. We're going to go over that in just a moment. Eitzim. The chest number 5 is going to be marked Eitzim. That's wood. If you made a neder that you're going to make a contribution of wood, so you could just simply deposit money in this 5th chest, and that money is going to be going towards the purchasing of wood. Wood obviously is used for the fuel for the mizbech to burn on the mizbech. Livona, if you made a neder that you're going to be offering Livona to the Beis Hamikdash, so you just simply put money in the pushka marked Livona, and that is going to be pushka number 6. And Zahav Lakaparas, so let's say you made a pledge that you were going to be donating gold for basically any of the kalim of the Beis Hamikdash. So you put it now in this 7th chest marked Zahav Lakaparas. And finally now, so that gets us now through 7 of the 13 pushkas. What about the last 6? So the Mishnah over here succinctly writes regarding the last 6, Shishal and Nadava. The last 6 are marked off as Nadava, meaning, as we've gone over numerous times, in the slow season of the Beis Hamikdash, where there are not a lot of karbanos that are being offered between the Tamashal Shachar and Tamashal Ben Arbaim, and basically to have a constant usage of the Mizbeach, so they would dip into these any one of these 6 pushkas and take the money and use it to buy olas, carbon olas, which are just simply going to be used as a voluntary carbon on the Mizbeach. Okay, why the number 6? In other words, wouldn't one pushka suffice for this particular fund? Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to be asking exactly that question. So stay tuned. That's going to be the Gemara at the end of today's daf. Tiklin chatin shebechol shana v'shana. So now the Mishnah itself is going to explain, right? The Mishnah over here is going to be giving commentary to the Mishnah. So when it comes to the first chest, which is Tiklin Chatin Shebechol Shana V'Shana, so that's the collection that's done every year. And now as far as the Tiklin Atikin are concerned, if you did not give last year, and now you are making up on past due pledges, or not pledges, it's obligations, so so you'll just simply put it in the pushka marked Tiklin Atikin. So that is explanations of chest numbers 1 and 2. Good, pretty straightforward. Now we're up to 3 and 4. So 3 and 4 is going to be subject to a machlokus, and the Mishnah presents it right here. Kinem hein torin v'gozla ola hein b'nei yona kulan olos div Rabbi Yehuda. The first sheet of the Mishnah is that the chest mark kinem, so that's going to be towards the purchasing of a tor. The fourth chest mark goes le ola. That's going to be for the purchasing of Bnei Yona. Again, just as a brief reminder, as a small introduction. So remember, as far as birds are concerned that are eligible to be brought onto the Mizbeach, so there are only going to be a total of 2 birds that can be offered as a carbon. We know that, as far as the number of birds that are kosher to eat, so there are, a lot. So, sorry for a very unscientific explanation. The Torah only goes through 24 birds that we're not allowed to eat, 24 species of birds that we're not allowed to eat, as far as the rest of the birds, so we're allowed to eat it. So as far as birds in terms of kashrus, so most of the birds that populate the earth, we're allowed to eat. Now, just mind you, as long as I mentioned it, I'll just mention it briefly, we can only eat birds based on a mesorah, meaning because we've lost our ability to identify which of the 24 birds, what are the 24 birds of the Torah, so therefore the only way that we can ensure that a bird is kosher is only if we have a Mesorah. The Rambam writes this very clearly. Anyway, just, I mentioned it briefly. To come back to the Mizbeach, the Torah tells us that only 2 types of birds are eligible to be brought as a carbon, and that is going to be the tor and the ben yona. Okay, so, tor, a turtle dove. Ben yona, pigeon. Okay, good. That's it. And those are the only birds can be offered. On top of that, birds can only be offered as one of two types of karbanos. A bird can either be brought as an ola or it can be brought as a chatas. According to Rebbe Yehuda, so as far as the pushkas numbers 3 and 4 are concerned, so the pushka mark kinim, so that's going to be for the purchases of tor. The pushka mark goes the ola, that's going to be for the purchase of Bnei Yona. But according to Rebbe Yehuda, they are all olas, meaning that money deposited in chest numbers 3 and 4 are only going to be for the purchase of a nedava. A person made a voluntary pledge that he's going to be bringing a pair of birds onto the Mizbeach. So that means that the birds are going to be a carbon ola. You obviously cannot pledge to bring a carbon chatas. So the pledge over here is going to be for an ola. Now, what about for the person that needs to bring a pair of birds, one an ola and one a chatas? Notably, a woman who is a yoledes after she gives birth. So an opportunity for her to bring a pair of birds, one being an ola and the other one being a chatas. So under those circumstances, according to Rav Yehuda, what happens over there? What happens over there is that she'll either bring a pair of birds or she'll give the money directly to the kohen, but not through the usage of the pushka. That is the shita of Rav Yehuda. The chachamim disagree. They say no. Kinem echad chatas ve'echad ola. Goes le ola kulan olos. According to the chachamim, pushka number 3, mark kinem, that's going to be for the people who are obligated to bring karbanos in the form of a bird, a pair of birds, one chatas, one ola. And the pushka mark goes leola, that's going to be for the voluntary offerings. Good, so you have a basic machlokas over here between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim in terms of pushkas numbers 3 and 4 that are clearly marked for birds, but specifically what type of donations. So machlokas between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. We're going to come back to this machlokas in just a little bit. Continuing in the Mishnah, Ha'omer Harei Alai Eitzim, a person who makes a pledge that he's going to bring wood to the Beis HaMikdash. So again, either he could bring the actual wood itself, but more practically, he'll put money in the pushka marked for wood. But how much wood does he need to bring? Meaning, what is going to be the minimum amount of wood based on his neder? So lo yivchos mishnei gzirim. So the Mishnah says no less than 2 logs. Livona, a person says that he pledges to bring Livona to the Beis HaMikdash, lo yifchos mi kometz. So there, he's going to bring a fistful of Livona, Zahav, person pledging that he's going to bring gold, lo yifchos mi dinar Zahav, can be no less than a dinar of Zahav, a gold dinar. Shisha l'nedava, nedava mayu osimba. So here the Mishnah tells us nedava, and what is the usage of nedava, these 6 pushkas for nedava. Lochim ba olos. So with it, you're going to be purchasing a carbon ola. Habasar l'shem. The meat's going to go to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, meaning that's standard destination of the meat of a carbon ola. It's burnt on the Mizbeach. And oros the Kohanim. As far as the hides are concerned, the hides are going to go to the Kohanim. Zem medrash darosh yo yada kohen gadol. And this is based on a medrash. The Mishnah over here is quoting a medrash. It is unusual for a Mishnah to quote a medrash, but here you find it. And that is Hashem Hu, Hashem, Hashem, La Hashem. And as this drasha is explained in the Bavli as well. Basically, the idea is that this pasuk over here is superfluous. So Zeh HaKlal, and the Mishnah goes on to explain. Kol Shehu Ba Mishum Chatos Mishum Ashva Yilakach Mehem Olos. Let's say you have surplus of a chatos, surplus of an asham. Now over here we have to be talking about surplus, because once you have the carbon chatos itself, and then it's rendered unnecessary, so you can take a chatas now and convert it into an ola. And we've gone over this numerous times. A chatas that no longer becomes necessary to offer, so then it's one of the chatas amesos. It's just simply going to be disposed of. Over here, what we're discussing is surplus. If I have surplus of chatas, or surplus of asham, so what do I do with that surplus? So I'm going to purchase with it a carbon ola. Habasa l'shem ba'arus l'kohanim. And now what we're going to do is that we're going to take the carbon ola, and what we do with every carbon ola. The meat of the animal goes up onto the Mizbech burnt, and that's La Hashem, and the hides go to the Kohanim, and so Shnei Ksuvim Kayamim. And now, basically, what we could do is that we can explain now to Psukim. Because Asham Lashem, because the pasuk that we just quoted, Asham Hu Asham Asham Lashem, so that tells us that the surplus of a carbon Asham goes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? Because we're going to take the surplus money, purchase with it a carbon ola, and the portion of the carbon ola, meaning the animal itself, is going to go on the mizbech, and the Asham La Kohen, and at the same time, the pasuk that says that the Asham is going to be is going to go to a Kohen, meaning the surplus is going to go to the Kohen. So what do we have? Omer Kasef Hashem veKasef Chatas Lo Yuvah Beis Hashem LeKohanim Yiyu. So the pasuk over here now, it happens to be a pasuk in Malachim, but it doesn't matter. The point is that the pasuk over here says that the surplus money is going to go to the Kohanim. So how can one pasuk says that it goes to, that the surplus goes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And how can another pasuk says that it goes to the Kohanim? And the answer is that what we're going to do is we're going to purchase an ola with it. And now, part of it goes to, on the Mizbech, meaning most of it goes on to the Mizbech, and some of it, meaning the hides, go to the Kohanim. And this is an old Medrash, but this is one that is cited in the Mishnah over here, and that's how we arrive at the conclusion, that any surplus money is gonna now go into the Nedava, and it's going to end up being used to purchase carbonolas, where you have most of it being burnt on the Mizbeach, the hides going to the Kohanim. Tanya. We start with the Gemara. The Gemara starts off, Amar Rav Yehuda lo haya shofar shokinim yushlaim mimea ta'arovis. So the Gemara over here quotes a Braisa. The Braisa says that according to the Shita of Rav Yehuda, you did not have a pushka for obligatory pair of birds, meaning this is really going back to our Mishnah. According to Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah, so there was a third and fourth pushka, but they were for olas. They were for bird olas, and there wasn't a pushka for an obligation, for a chatas ola combination. Now, why not? So the Gemara now is going to explain, according to Rabbi Yehuda, why not? So Shema Tamasata Vnimse Deme Chatos Mesos Muravas Bahen. So the Gemara says as follows. The reason is because if a woman were to put, let's say, money into the pushka, and let's say that we did have a pushka for an obligatory pair of birds, well, what may end up happening is that after the woman contributed into this pushka, so maybe we should be concerned with the fact that the woman would die, and now the money that was designated for a carbon chatas is now going to be basically a chatas amesa. I understand we're talking about money, but the point is still going to be the same. In that, just like a chatas animal, where the owner has died, no longer can be used and must be disposed of. Well, the same thing is going to be true regarding the money. Money designated to a carbon chatas where the owner died, so the money has to be disposed of. And the problem now is that this money is mixed in with a bunch of other monies, and therefore, the Gemara says is that we're just basically going to ruin all the monies because we don't know which of the monies right now is for the belongs to the woman who died. So the Gemara first is bothered by the fact is that really should this be a concern? Meaning that what kind of time differential are we talking about between the depositing of the money in the pushka and the actual usage of the money? It's done in the same day. And the Gemara is basically bothered by this very question. V'atayin, the Gemara quotes the following brisa: Ha'isha she'amra harei alai kein. The woman says harei alai kein. Now this is a little bit confusing over here because normally the language of harei alai is talking about a donation. That's a neder. That's not what we're talking about over here. So over here we have to say that harei alai just simply means that she's obligated to bring a pair of birds, right? She had a baby. Whatever the case is, it's not talking about a donation. It's talking about an obligation. So Haisha Shama Harei Alai Kain. So Mevia Demei Kain Menos Nevi Shofar. So what she's going to do is she's going to bring the money necessary in order to purchase a pair of birds, and she's going to put it into the pushka. And Veochelos Bekachim Veeinu Chosheshes. So she can eat kachim now, not immediately, not effective immediately, but by tonight. By tonight she'll be able to eat kachim because Veeinu Chosheshes Shem Nisas Kohen. And what do you have to worry about? That the Kohanim were lazy? You don't have to worry about that. And on top of that, we also need not worry that maybe she died in the interim. Meaning that here are two things that we can be confident of. Number one is that the from the Kohanim standpoint, Let me go in the order of the Gemara. From the woman's standpoint, so once she puts the money in that day, so the Kohanim are going to check the chest every single day, and whatever money is there, they're going to apply towards the purchasing of a pair of birds, one a chatas, one an ola. They're going to be offering it that very same day. She has achieved her kapara now, and by tonight she can already eat karbanos. That from her concern, from her standpoint, that is a degree of confidence. And now from the standpoint of the Kohanim could be rest assured that the woman survived, meaning for the day that she put the money in the chest, she didn't die today. Meaning, basically, you have a cheskes chayim. Good. So, and mind you, by the way, this entire brisa, seems to be everyone's position. Meaning, it seems to be a unanimous position. So, how could it be that Rabbi Yehuda says that we don't have a chest for the obligatory pair of birds, one chatas, one ola, when meanwhile, what are you worried about? Somebody's going to die? Not that day. So the Gemara says, ki kamrinan b'chata shem mesubalim vadai. So the Gemara says, you're right. So if it was just for the concern that maybe somebody's going to die after they put the money in the pushka, so you're right. There's no reason to be concerned. Again, we're talking about for that day, a person will have a cheskes chayim for that day. I'm conceding the point. The Gemara says what Rabbi Yehuda is concerned about is the following. Let's say she puts money in the pushka. Let's say we dedicated a pushka for obligatory pair of birds. One achatas, one ola. So she puts money in the chest, as does many other women. And then, not that we're worried that she died, but she actually died. Meaning rachmanus. After she put money in the chest, so she died. And so now, it's not that we're guessing or we're projecting that she's going to die, because we're going to assume that's not the case. We're talking about a scenario where she actually died. So under those circumstances, now what do I have? I have a tarovis. I have a mixture. Where one of the monies that are in there are going to be from a woman who now unfortunately has already passed away. And so that money now is chatas mesas money, mixed in with the other monies. And it's interesting, the Gemara assumes over here, Gemara doesn't even raise it as an issue, that we're not going to say bittul. Presumably we're not going to say bittul because it's money. Oh, okay, the Gemara assumes that there's not going to be bittul. And so under those circumstances, so now that creates the problem. So Rabbi Yehuda says, in order to avoid the problem altogether, there will not be a pushka for chova. There will only be a pushka for Nadava. Okay, granted, two pushkas for Nadava, but one's for the tour and the other one's for the B'nai Yonah. Now, the E Amrina, but the Gemara still does not let go of this point. The Gemara says, but you know what? Let's assume everything we just said. A woman put money into the pushka. Let's say we had a pushka for chova. And a woman put in the money for her chova. And she died, and we know that she died. And it's mixed in with other monies. The Gemara says, I have the following suggestion. Why don't you take out whatever the value is of a bird, take it out and rely on the principle of Breira. V'i Amrina, that's the Gemara's next question. Nivra arba zuzim v'nishtei b'nahara. So let's take out four zuzim. The Gemara assumes that a bird costs four zuz. Okay, I mean, there has to be a set price. Otherwise, how do people know how much money to put into the pushka? So what the Kohanim now should do is let's take out four zuz and v'i d'chlishtaro. Based on the principle of Breira, meaning which one of the monies is hers? Well, we don't know, but whatever money's taken out, hovrar hadavar lemafreir, retroactively we can attach it to her. So the Gemara says, ha amrin ba'am, Rav Yehuda leislei Breira, but the Gemara says, but I'm going to remind you that Rav Yehuda does not subscribe to the principle of Breira. Breira topic comes up again and again throughout the Bavli. It happens to be that this is going to come up again in Yuma, in this very context, so we're going to get to review this again in Masechet Yuma. So the Gemara says, okay, so now, finally, when all said and done, we now have a clear understanding of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda does not have a pushka for a chova. And now the reason, as the Gemara just explained, is because Rabbi Yehuda, not worried about maybe somebody, a woman dying after putting in money in, but rather worrying about a case where we actually learned that a woman died. And in the circumstance, in the scenario where she died, now the money that she put in is chatas mesa money, and you can't just simply take out four zuz for the chatas mesa that belong to her, relying on the principle of Breira, because Rabbi Yehuda rejects the principle of Breira. He does not subscribe to Breira. That is all the reason why, for Rabbi Yehuda, Pushkas numbers 3 and 4 are not obligatory birds, but rather voluntary birds. They're Olas Nadava. Continuing in the Gemara, Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Bon, Amar Rabbi Ba bar Mama Bai, Amar Hare Alai Eitz, Mevi Gizar Echad. The Gemara says the following. Let's say instead of a person making a pledge that he was going to bring Eitzim, which as we learned back in the Mishnah means that he has to bring the money equivalent to 2 blocks of wood. Let's say he says the word Eitz. So the Gemara says, yeah, so under those circumstances, he can bring 1 block of wood. And the Gemara supports this Amar, Rebbe Elazar, Masis Amar Kein, Shezeh Karban Bifnei Atzmo, Vizeh Karban Bifnei Atzmo. So, yeah, in other words, a block of wood is considered an independent unit. So, Behaita, the Tanin and Taman. And the truth of the matter is that we have a Mishnah supporting this as well. The Mishnah, goes through, I'm going to call it a parade. The parade of Kohanim that bring up each section of the Tamid up the ramp. And one of the Kohanim are going to be holding a block of wood, actually 2 blocks of wood. Shnaim biyadam, shnei gzira eitzim. So 2 Kohanim are going to be holding in their hands 2 blocks of wood. So you see that 1 Kohen is holding 1 block of wood. So you see that a block of wood can be viewed as an independent carbon. Okay, and then, the Gon takes out the next line. Anyway, so we're skipping the words carbon larabas as the eitzim. Okay, good. So if a person says that he's going to offer an eight, so he can in fact bring 1 block of wood. Okay, this block of wood, what is its dimensions? Next topic of the Gemara. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi Amar, Uvya Amma be'ama shocheches. So as far as the thickness, it's going to be an Amma, and it's going to be the larger Amma. The Arkan be'ama geduma, but in terms of the length, and I imagine length over here means length and width, so it's going to be the short Amma. Rabbi Chuni b'shem Rabbi Ami kimin tortani. Now the way Tiklan Chatan really struggles over here, he gives multiple explanations of what this means. But let's just go with his first one, which is that he believes that the thickness is going to be much smaller than an ama. It's going to be basically this utensil, the tortani. Actually, we described the tortani not so long ago in the Bavli or whatever. It's some sort of utensil that was used. Anyway, according to the second opinion, the thickness of the block is going to be much thinner. It's not going to be a full amma. So basically, the block of wood, it's funny. We normally talk about wood that you put on the fire. So we think about logs. Over here, it's a square block. A square block that's clearly an amma by an amma. And how thick it is, subject to a debate amongst the amorayim. The Gemara continues, Amar of Shmuel Barav Yitzchak, Lefisha lo yamakam amarecha ela amma lama. So the Gemara says, why? Why is this dimensions of a block going to be 1 amma by 1 amma? Because if you look at the Mizbech that was built by Moshe, so you will see that on the very top, at least for the part that we're going to be burning carbon, it's only going to be an area of 1 amma by 1 amma. Lefisha lo yamakam amarecha ela amma lama. The Gemara says, Lefisha lo yaba ela amma geduma. And therefore, the block that's going to be put on this area cannot be larger than an amma. In fact, even the amma itself, it's going to be the shorter amma, meaning basically you're holding the fist really tight in order to measure it. And the reason why is because you basically want it to be inscribed in the area of the amma of the Mizbech of Moshe. Obviously, when you're looking at the Mizbech of the Beis HaMikdash, it's going to be a much larger surface area on the very top. But going back to the origins of Moshe's Mizbech, since its total dimensions is 1 amma by 1 amma, that's why the block of wood is going to be, the minimum block of wood is going to be the dimension 1 amma by 1 amma. V'tinike, the Gemara here quotes a Braisa as well. Amma hayesod, amma sovev, amma karkov, amma kranos, v'amma maracha. Okay, not to go through all the details right now, but basically what we're looking at over here is that by the time we've gone from the base all the way to the top. So basically the top now is just 1 amma by 1 amma. Okay. Levona lo yifchos mikometz, as far as the Levona is concerned, the minimum sheer Levona, meaning if you made a pledge that you are going to give Levona to the Beis HaMikdash, so no less than a kometz. And the Gemara goes on to explain, Nemar kan haskarav, Nemar lahalan haskarav. So the Gemara says that we have the Gzereshava over here when dealing with the lechem apanim. So the lavona, which are 2 spoonfuls of lavona, which sit atop the lechem apanim, and are going to be burnt as the matir for the lechem apanim. So the Torah uses the word askara. It says regarding the kmitza that's done by the kohen on a standard mincha askara. So ma askara mor lalan melo kometz. Av askara murakad melo kometz. So just like by standard mincha, so the word askara, which is a reference to the actual kmitza. So the shear is going to be a kometz, it's going to be a fistful. So too, when describing lavona, so it gives us now the shear using the xerishava, that's going to be a kometz, a fistful. So imal lahalan shnei kometzim, av kan shnei kometzin. So the Gemara says, great. The xerishava takes us to the lechem apanim. As we described, the lechem apanim has 2 spoonfuls. So why don't we say now that the shear should be 2 spoonfuls? So Amar Rabbi Elai klam lamdu lekometz ella mi minchas chote. So the Gemara says no. Kmitza is learned from a minchas chote, meaning basically from a standard mincha. Ma lahalan kometz achaser pasul avkan kometz achaser pasul. So it can't be anything less than a kmitza, but at the same time, however, it's going to be 1 kometz. So basically, the Gemara says that we're assuming standard kometz, which is 1 kmitza. Amra v'yusa milsa de Rabbi Eli Amra hamizdan dev lavona mivia become social kohen. So the Gemara says, okay, and if you make an adava, donation, a pledge that you're going to bring lavona, so you have to bring kometz. It's interesting over here. It says kometz shel kohen. So kometz shel kohen just simply means over here, the word gadol is in parentheses, but it just basically means that you're going to be basing it on the fist of a kohen. Now, presumably, the kohen over here means a large kohen, but in other words, the fist of the kohen. And Rabbi Chizkiah b'shem Rabbi Yirmiyah, I feel become it's a balim. You don't need to measure it based on the fist of the kohen, meaning it can even be based on the size of the fist of the owner. Okay, could be over here. The difference is that when we say kohen, we mean the largest kohen. It means it's got to be a larger fist size. Okay, could be. Anyway, just finishing up today's Dav Zahav. So as far as gold is concerned, lo yivchos amar ablazer v'husha shehizkir tsura. So when the Mishnah says that when you pledge you're going to give a zahav, so it cannot be anything less than a gold dinar. It's got to be a coin. So Rabbi Elazar says that's true if you actually said the word coin. Aval im lo yizkir tsura. But if you did not say the word coin, so then maybe afilu tsinara. So then you could bring a really small instrument, meaning just a needle or a small fork, right? Something really small made up of gold. So it does not have to be the size of a gold dinar. And finally, shisha l'nedava. So it said in our Mishnah that the last 6 pushkas are going to be to nedava. And the question is very simple. Why the number 6? So Chizkiah amar keneged shisha batei avos. So according to Chizkiah, it has to do with the fact that there are 6 batei avos. We know that the Kohanim are divided into 24 shifts. The Mishmaros of the Kohanim, meaning the entire body of Kohanim, are broken up into 24 families, if you will. And basically what you're going to be doing is that you're going to be going to the Beis HaMikdash, serving on your Mishmar for a full week, from Shabbos to Shabbos, right? The changing of the guard, so to say, from one Mishmar to another Mishmar, will occur on Shabbos itself. Remember the Lechem Apanim? The 12 loaves are taken off of the Shulchan, divided between the Mishmar Hayotze and the Mishmar Nechnas. And even within every Mishmar, there's going to be a further subdivision, and that's what's called a Beis Av. So you're going to have within each Mishmar a Beis Av. That means to say that Mishmar is now going to be divided into 6 subunits, and that means that they're going to be working in the Beis HaMikdash from Sunday to Friday, 6 days of the week. Shabbos, the entire Mishmar comes back. Anyway, so the Pushkas are now going to be divided into 6. So basically now you have the 6 batei avos. And presumably what that means is that each day of the week, it's basically your 6 pushkas are going to be marked Sunday through Friday. And so that means that the Beis Av that happens to be working on Tuesday will be going to the 3rd of the 6 pushka. Presumably that's what it means. Bar pijamar keneged shesh behemos. There are 6 different types of animals that can be brought as a carbon ola. And that is par, egel, seir, ayil, gedi, tleh. So, right, remember, an ola can only be brought from a male animal, but even within the world of male animals, it could be further subdivided. Par and egel basically are your larger animals, but the division is between ages. and Seir, the Seir is obviously the goat, and the Isle Gedit Leh. So, that's going to be talking about different types of sheep, just again, divided by age, but they're all going to be male. Shmuel Amar Keneged Shisha Karbanos. It's going to be divided based on, six different types of Karbanos, and that is, skip the parentheses, Chatz Asasha Mincha Asirisa Eifa. So, six different types of Karbanos, and the, what are going to go into the Pushkas are going to be the surplus of the of these different types of karbanos. And Rav Yochanan Ayde Shenadav Meruba Ribalah Shofar Sabrei. Rav Yochanan gives the last explanation, just a pragmatic explanation. In other words, basically the Chachamim figure it out. The kind of traffic that we have and the amount of coins that go into these pushkas. And they found that basically six is the right number of pushkas that basically will be able to help the kind of traffic that basically goes through. And the number six is just simply pragmatic, meaning that's how many shofars ended up being needed. Okay. Adkan. We'll stop over here. I know we have a little bit left in order to finish the parak. We'll finish the parak tomorrow. In the meantime, however, let's quickly review. Let's quickly recap. Shkalim daf yud ches. We went over in the beginning of today's daf the menorahs and the shulchanos that were added by Shlomo HaMelech. 10 shulchanos and 10 menorahs were added by Shlomo HaMelech to basically accentuate and augment the shulchan and the menorah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Again, the Gemara does not breathe a word about maybe it would be an issue about Tosif. Okay, certainly an interesting discussion. But meanwhile, the Gemara was focused more on configuration. How is everything fitting into the Heichal with the 10 additional shulchanos and menorahs that were put together by Shlomo HaMelech? Good. And that basically took us to the end of that discussion. The final Mishnah of this perek talked about the Shlosh Esrei Shofros, the 13 pushkas that were in the Beis HaMikdash, and what was the assignment of all 13 of them. The Mishnah went through details of the first seven. The first seven were basically four obligations. Well, that's debatable. But the first one is for current shkalim. Second one is for shkalim that were past due of previous years. Numbers three and four were for the birds, literally. Machlokus amongst the Tanaim, whether they were for Nedava, that's Rav Yehuda Shita, or whether one pushka was for Chova, and the other one was for Nedava, that's the Shita of the Chachamim. And Pushka's numbers 5, 6, and 7 are going to be for wood, Lavona, and gold for Kalim. And then the last six are going to be for Nedava. The Mishnah goes through in detail all 13, but we basically just covered it even in the review. And then the Gemara's discussion. Why, according to Rav Yehuda, is there no Pushka for obligatory birds? And the Gemara goes on to explain, because his concern is that after a woman puts in money into the chova, had there been a chova, and then we discover that she died, not that we're worried she's going to die, but we actually discover that she died. So under those circumstances, now basically what you're looking at is you have chatas mesa, money mixed in with others. Rav Yehuda does not subscribe to Brera, so you can't simply pull out the money. And that's why, according to Rav Yehuda, there are no pushkas for chova. And when a woman has a chova, so she'll obviously either purchase the birds herself or give the money directly to a kohen, but not using the method of a pushka. And the Gemara just went through the rest of the Mishnah and the details of when a person makes an unspecified donation of wood, and he says the word eitz, not eitzim, can he bring one block of wood? The answer is yes. The Mishnah goes on to describe the measurement of that block of wood. It's an amma by an amma. Thickness up for a debate. When a person says lavona, what's the base minimum of a lavona donation? It's going to be a fistful. Question of the Gemara, whether we're talking about the fistful of a large coin or we're talking about even the person who was misnadev. And finally, our last discussion of today was going to be the amount of gold. If you say gold coin, so it has to be a dinar. If you don't say gold coin, so just a small utensil. Sorry. And the very last part of today, we talked about the shishal and the dava, six pushkas that were used for a for voluntary offerings. So why the number six? The Gemara gave numerous explanations in terms of why we got to the number six. Adkan.